Hi everyone, today we're going to be reading the East Boston Times Free Press. This edition is from Wednesday, April 8th, 2026. A great weight. Scholar athlete Petrocelli seizes opportunity and earns all-star honors by Kerry Schumann. Anthony Petrocelli worked hard to earn his promotion to the St. John's Prep in Danvers varsity hockey team. And when that moment arrived this winter, the scholar athlete elevated his game and delivered a top-caliber season. Petrocelli wrapped up an outstanding senior campaign with an appearance in the MSHCA All-Star Game on March 22nd at the Worcester Ice Center. That high honor followed other esteemed recognition as the Daily Item, Salem News, and Catholic Conference All-Star. It was a case of Petrocelli's dedication to the sport and off-season preparation paying off in a big way. He had played his previous three seasons for the freshman and junior varsity before becoming a first-line left winger for St. John's, a perennial state title contender out of the potent Catholic Conference. Anthony is also an excellent student, carrying a 4.1 grade point average as a member of the National Honor Society at St. John's, one of New England's most prestigious college preparatory schools. East Boston roots. Anthony is the son of popular former state senator Anthony Petrocelli and Associate Justice Alessandra Petrocelli. I lived in East Boston until we moved halfway through third grade, recalled Anthony. I was in the Learned Escape program at the Winthrop Rink with Sean Donahue and Rob O'Leary and played 3 years in Winthrop youth hockey, with some of our games taking place at Piazza Rink in East Boston. He continued his youth hockey career at Boston Advantage, an elite program based in Hingham. He took his rising skills to the Vipers program in Saugus and then to the Warriors out of Haverhill. He competed for the North Shore Wings the past 2 years, entering the powerful prep program. A resident of Linfield, he entered St. John's Prep as a freshman and played very well as a left winger on the second line for Coach John Zimini. "He was the best coach I ever had," said Anthony. He retired from coaching after my sophomore year, but he's now the director of hockey operations. Petrocelli moved up to junior varsity as a sophomore and returned to the team for his junior season, enjoying a stellar year. He trained hard in the offseason in a strength and conditioning program at the prep and attended Holland Hockey Academy in Woburn. As a 5'11" senior, Petrocelli played on the prep varsity's first line with Christian Coleman, a senior from Linfield, and Timmy McColligan, a junior from Reading. Crediting his linemates for their exceptional performance and teamwork this season, Petrocelli scored 12 goals and 8 assists as the Eagles finished 15-3-2 with an 11-game regular season winning streak, defeating Catholic Memorial St. John's of Shrewsbury in Zverian in consecutive games, under head coach Christian Hansen, a prep alumnus and one of the best players in school history. St. John's, the number 3 seed, won its first MIAA tournament game 7-0 over Franklin before being ousted by a tough 15-win conference champion Arlington Catholic team 2-1 in the second round. How does Anthony assess his 4-year career at the prep? "It was a great experience, and the motivation of not fully being on the varsity in my junior year is what helped me have such a great senior year. I worked really hard my 4 years, and I think I've set a good example for the underclassmen with my work ethic," said Petrocelli. "I also made a lot of great friends at the prep." Anthony lauded Hansen for making him a better player and for preparing the team well for the Eagles' challenging schedule. "Coach Hansen is a great motivator and really got us ready to play each game," said Petrocelli. "He put us in a position to win every time we stepped on the ice. I do know that Hansen was a fantastic hockey player himself." Praise from the head coach. Hansen, an all-scholastic who played college hockey at UNH and is a Salem police lieutenant, lauded Petrocelli for his improvement each season, culminating with his success story as a senior. "Anthony continued to get better every year," said Hansen. "He was on the varsity bubble as a junior, and he had a great year on the JV team. We knew coming into his senior year, he would be more than just a guy that's going to fill out the roster. He was going to come in and contribute, and that's exactly what he did." Hansen also commended Petrocelli's work ethic and positive attitude. "He has such a great attitude and work ethic. I really, really like Anthony," added Hansen. "He played on the first line and earned every minute of ice time. He had some key goals and was a big part of our penalty-killing unit. He was such a workhorse for us the entire year. One of those guys you put out late in the game to preserve a victory, or if you need a goal, he'll go into the corners and give 100% on every play to dig out a puck. I can't say enough good things about his contributions to the team and the program. He's a very good student and just works hard in every aspect of his life. Petrocelli thanked his parents for their support from day one. They were at every game, and I can't thank them enough for everything they've done for me, said Petrocelli. College intentions. Petrocelli will attend Clemson University in South Carolina, where he will play hockey, joining some of his current and former prep teammates in the powerful club program. I visited Clemson in the fall, and I love the campus, said Petrocelli. Boston will mark one Boston Day with acts of kindness, special to the Times Free Press. Mayor Michelle Wu and the City of Boston released the annual call to action for community-based organizations, businesses, and City of Boston residents to come together for volunteer events and acts of kindness in recognition of our city's spirit of care for one another in response to the tragic events of April 15, 2013. One Boston Day, observed on April 15th, honors the victims, survivors, and first responders of the 2013 Boston Marathon. Mayor Wu is encouraging acts of kindness on Wednesday, April 15th, and for people to take part in volunteer opportunities throughout the week. 13 years ago, when the horrific tragedy at the Boston Marathon shook our city to its core, we came together in love, mourning families, supporting survivors, and healing together, said Mayor Michelle Wu. Each year on One Boston Day, we honor that spirit by coming together to perform acts of kindness for one another and make a difference in our neighborhoods. I hope everyone will join their neighbors today in honoring those we lost and celebrating the love that makes Boston a home for everyone. City of Boston departments and workers will again this year be hosting service projects for people to give back to their communities on April 15th and throughout the week leading up to Marathon Monday on April 20th, 2026. The Mayor's Office of Civic Organizing is facilitating a neighborhood cleanup for youth and families on Saturday, April 18th, starting at 9 a.m. at Franklin Park Playstead. Interested volunteers are asked to register for the annual cleanup online. As spring arrives in Boston each year, we are reminded of the hope and spirit of our city, said Bill Richard, co-founder of the Martin Richard Foundation. One Boston Day gives us a moment to reflect on our shared values, most importantly, to care for one another. In Boston, resilience is not just remembered, it is lived. One Boston Day honors the enduring spirit of a city that rises together, supports one another, and transforms adversity into unity, compassion, and strength, said Audrey Epstein Rennie, founder of the Jillian Rennie Stepping Strong Center at Brigham and Women's Hospital. That spirit, so evident in the aftermath of the 2013 Boston Marathon tragedy, continues to guide us as we come together in service of one another to meet today's challenges. In honor of One Boston Day, the Stepping Strong Center is offering a free virtual Stop the Bleed training open to the public. Uncontrolled bleeding is the leading cause of preventable injury, death, and can be fatal in as little as 5 minutes, often before first responders arrive. However, there are simple techniques that bystanders can use to slow or stop bleeding and save a life. The rapid application of these techniques in the chaotic moments after the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing helped to save the life of Jillian Rennie, for whom the center is named. On Wednesday, April 15th, free Zoom sessions are available at 12 p.m. or 6 p.m. to learn how to recognize life-saving bleeding and life-threatening bleeding and take immediate effective action. Registration can be found online for the 12 p.m. session and the 6 p.m. session. As the city marks 13 years since 2013, the City of Boston and the Boston Athletic Association, BAA, will honor the day with a wreath laying in the Back Bay the morning of Wednesday, April 15th. More details will become available in the coming weeks. One Boston Day is a time for all of us to remember, uplift, and extend gratitude to one another. As Race Day and the 130th Boston Marathon presented by Bank of America approaches, we encourage all athletes, volunteers, spectators, and community members to unite and celebrate the spirit, resilience, and determination of our community on One Boston Day, said Jack Fleming, president and CEO of the Boston Athletic Association. This year's One Boston Day will occur on Wednesday of Boston Marathon Race Week, a time when many athletes from around the world begin arriving to Boston. As stewards of the event, the Boston Athletic Association looks forward to welcoming the world to our home and showcasing what truly makes our community and sport special. More information about One Boston Day will be available at boston.gov/one-boston. The East Boston Times Free Press Forum. To boldly go where no man has gone before. For those who were among the 600 million people who watched Neil Armstrong descend the ladder from the Apollo 11 lunar module Eagle and set foot on the moon's Sea of Tranquility on the evening in the Eastern Time Zone of July 20th, 1969, and utter the immortal words, "That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind," this past week's mission of the Artemis II astronauts, who have traveled further from Earth, 252,228 miles, than any other human as they circled the moon, has been exhilarating. Armstrong was soon followed on the moon by his crewmate, Buzz Aldrin, and together they strolled across the lunar surface for more than 2 hours. They planted an American flag, spoke with President Richard M. Nixon, deployed scientific instruments, and collected lunar rocks before returning to the Apollo 11, where crewmate Michael Collins was awaiting their return in a lunar orbit. Just a few months before Apollo 11's flight in December of 1968, the Apollo 8 crew of Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and William Anders were the first humans to see and photograph the far side of the moon and an Earthrise. That trio, who famously read from the Book of Genesis on Christmas Eve, were named Time Magazine's Men of the Year upon their return. Armstrong's moonwalk fulfilled a pledge made by President John F. Kennedy in 1961, during the height of the Cold War with the Soviet Union, when he declared that the U.S. would put a man on the moon before the end of the decade. NASA sent 5 more missions to the moon through 1972, and by that time, lunar walks were taken for granted by the American public. Been there, done that, was the general view of most Americans. Nixon slashed NASA's budget shortly after the first lunar landing, which not only cut short future moon flights, 9 more had been scheduled, but also prevented NASA from expanding its space program. In addition to the triumphs of that era, we also vividly remember the subsequent tragedies of the space shuttles Challenger in January 1986 and Columbia in February 2003. Those were events where we recall exactly where we were when we heard the news that claimed the lives of 14 astronauts. Both serve as a reminder that despite our technological prowess, space travel is a dangerous venture. In addition to circling the moon, the present mission of the Artemis II essentially is serving as a flying laboratory. The crew is conducting health experiments to study how deep space radiation affects human tissue. They also are testing the spacecraft's life support systems in an environment far more hostile than low Earth orbit. Astronauts presently are scheduled to set foot again on the moon in 2028 on the Artemis IV's mission, to be followed by the Artemis V later that year, when the astronauts will try to establish a base station on the moon. Fans of the original Star Trek from the 1960s will recall the words in our headline that were uttered by Captain James T. Kirk in his iconic opening monologue at the start of each show. For those of us who were around for the first moon landing, we are thrilled that once again we are fulfilling Captain Kirk's call for mankind to reach for the stars. Hearing Addresses Needs Priorities for HUD Funding by Ryan Owens. The city held a public hearing last month to discuss the needs and priorities for an estimated $27 million in funding from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The funds may be invested in housing, homeless assistance, and community development programs that serve low to moderate income residents over a 1-year period from July 1st through June 30th, 2027, the city said. The city's HUD action plan covers 4 federal programs: community development block grant, home investment partnerships, emergency solutions grant program, and housing opportunities for persons with AIDS. The March 4th hearing was run by Rick Wilson, the city's Director of Administration and Finance, and Tina Griffith, Boston's Assistant Director for Grants Management. The hearing occurred as the action plan enters the third of 5 years to develop housing and communities deeper into Boston. 2 more public hearings are slated for this month, one on April 29th will be in person, and another on April 30th will be virtual, according to the city's website. When we do our 5-year plan, we do a really deep dive into assessing the needs and priorities based on community input, public hearings, data collection, meeting with different departments and different community leaders, Griffith said during the March hearing. It's very data-driven as well. Boston receives annual grant funding from the four HUD programs. This year, the city received $76 million from HUD, but only $27 million is expected to go into the programs, with much of the rest going to continuum of care. People who spoke at the meeting brought up a range of topics, including affordable housing, supportive services for the unhoused, and better economic development in the neighborhoods. Kelly McGrath, executive director of Brighton Main Streets, said the HUD funding is critical. It enables Main Streets organizations to support small businesses, strengthen the local economy, and create vibrant commercial districts, McGrath said. Barbara Johnson, director of development at the New England Culinary Arts Training Program, said the funds have helped to double the number of people the program served each year to roughly 260. It wouldn't be possible without this funding, and we're extremely grateful, Johnson said. Speakers also used the hearing to criticize Governor Moore Healey's administration and legislators for not doing enough for the unhoused. Leslie Credle, founder of Justice for Housing, criticized the governor's new shelter bill, which Credle said caused barriers for families. "What we have found are pregnant women, even men who have their children, being denied access to family shelters," Credle said. "And so they end up on our doorstep because we are the only agency that caters to incarcerated individuals returning to the community." Kiana Green, CEO of Vision Life's Consulting Services, which provides locals with skill training and assists with job placement, said the housing crisis she witnessed 15 years ago was still in play. "Too often there are individuals that really do have the motivation to do better, be better, have better, but just don't have the opportunity and or the resources to do so," Green said. Leo Moss of Bay Cove Human Services appealed for more funding for senior citizens. "I know the funding structure hasn't changed quite a bit in the past few years," Moss said. "It's always the same. I've always come up here and asked for more money, but I never get it." Boston is expected to announce its plans for the HUD funding in early April. This story is part of a partnership between the Independent Newspaper Group and Boston University Department of Journalism's Newsroom program. Boston Parks Department announces registration for Tenacity's 2026 Summer Tennis and Reading Program. The Boston Parks and Recreation Department is excited to announce that registration is now available for our free summer tennis and reading program, STRP, in partnership with Tenacity. The program will return to 16 park locations across Boston this summer, offering youth a unique opportunity to stay active and engaged through tennis, fitness, and reading. Designed for Boston youth ages 6 to 15, STRP combines tennis and fitness activities with engaging reading sessions to help keep both minds and bodies active during the summer months. Registration is now available through the end of July. "We are beyond excited to offer this program in partnership with Tenacity," said Interim Commissioner Kathy Baker Eclipse. "Not only will this program bring attendees to a vast number of our parks throughout Boston, but will also give kids a meaningful opportunity to grow both on and off the court, building physical skills like tennis alongside mental skills like reading." The program will run from July 6th through August 14th with two daily sessions, in the morning from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. ages 6 to 10, and in the afternoon from 1 p.m. to 3:45 p.m. ages 10 to 15. Each group meets daily for a session that includes tennis and fitness activities and a variety of light reading activities. STRP is available at the following locations: in Boston Common, the Back Bay / Beacon Hill, at Carter Playground in Roxbury, at Moakley Park in South Boston, at Constitution Beach in East Boston, in Dorchester Park at Dorchester, at English High School Athletic Fields in Jamaica Plain, at Harbor Point in South Boston, at Hunt Almond Park in Mattapan, at Iacono / Reedville Playground in Hyde Park, at Madison Park High School Athletic Fields in Roxbury, at Malcolm X Park in Roxbury, at Rogers Park in Alston Brighton, and Roxbury Latin High School in West Roxbury, at East Boston Memorial Park / Sartori Stadium in East Boston, at Savin Hill Park in Dorchester, at West Roxbury High School Athletic Fields in West Roxbury. Please note, Harbor Point, Savin Hill Park, East Boston Memorial Park / Sartori Stadium, and Carter Playground only offer a morning session. Since 1999, the Summer Reading and Tennis Program has been offered at parks across Boston, providing an enriching learning environment for city youth, keeping minds and bodies active during the summer. "Tenacity started in the summer," said founder and CEO Ned Eames. "Before we were in classrooms year-round, we were in Boston events, parks, rackets in hand, and books open, helping kids discover their confidence and love of learning. For decades, Boston families have trusted us to provide a safe, supportive, and fun space where kids can grow, learn, and build friendships. Tenacity's free summer tennis and reading program is still local in neighborhood parks and still changing lives. We invite Boston families to make this summer unforgettable for their children. Through its partnership with Tenacity, the City of Boston employs over 100 youth workers, providing exciting summer jobs that offer rich opportunities to build leadership skills. These positions are coordinated through Boston's Youth Engagement and Employment Program and the Boston Centers for Youth and Families. All STRP site leaders and staff 18 years and older are USTA Safe Play certified. Registration is now available at tenacity.org/summer-tennis-reading-program-boston. For questions about registration, please contact Mike at mikekennedy@tenacity.org. Atlantic Works Gallery presents Merging in Stories, a duo exhibition. Atlantic Works Gallery is thrilled to announce Merging in Stories, a duo exhibition showcasing the work of artists Chris Lanhu Chow and Jonathan Pena Taberas. The opening reception is Saturday, April 11th from 6 to 9 p.m. The third Thursday artist talk and reception is Thursday, April 16th from 6 to 9 p.m. The closing reception will be Friday, April 24th from 6 to 8 p.m. This is free and open to the public. Chris Lanhu Chow from Taiwan works primarily in painting, developing a visual language rooted in color, materiality, and personal symbols. Her practice reflects an ongoing exploration of perception, memory, and inner experience. A Story of Signs presents a selection of works from different periods brought together in an ongoing dialogue rather than a linear progression. Through layered surfaces and language of personal symbols, Chow explores color as an experiential space where memory, time, and perception intersect. Rather than offering fixed meanings, these paintings invite a quiet encounter. Forms emerge, shift, and reappear, carrying traces of earlier gestures while opening toward new relationships. Color is not descriptive but active, creating movement, tension, and resonance across the surface. For Chow, painting is not a means of explanation, for a way of staying close to what feels true. Each work becomes part of a continuous process and unfolding that cannot always be named but can be sensed. In this space, viewers are invited to pause, to look, and to experience a moment of stillness and presence. Jonathan Pena Taberas, a Colombian-American artist based in East Boston, approaches art as a primary language, one that communicates through color, form, and emotion rather than explanation. His work in A Story of Self explores the inner landscapes formed through cultural identity, transition, and growth. Through experimentation with color and mixed media, Pena Taberas creates spaces of vulnerability and connection, inviting viewers into moments of shared emotional truth. Atlantic Works Boston at 80 Border Street in Boston, Massachusetts, is an artist-run collaborative space for art and ideas located in East Boston. The gallery is open to the public every Friday and Saturday, 2 to 6 p.m. For private viewing, contact at atlanticworks.org. For more information, visit atlanticworks.org. Rescuers Work to Combat Food Waste by Vina Berger. Food rescuers Jeff Schwartz and Virginie Forget stood outside the Trader Joe's on Boylston Street recently, gingerly stacking boxes of carefully packaged groceries into the trunk of Forget's car. Containers labeled fresh fruit were stacked atop dozens of eggs until they filled the entire trunk. As Schwartz and Forget closed the trunk, it was difficult to miss the eye-catching Coral Food Rescue U.S. Boston bumper sticker, designating that this load was more than just a large grocery haul. It was a part of a salvage program directly benefiting and feeding the community. "We are a breadbasket to ourselves and could be to the world," said Schwartz. Food Rescue U.S., founded in 2011, is a national volunteer-based nonprofit whose mission is to combat food insecurity and food waste by recovering donated food from cafes and grocers that would normally be tossed away and giving the times to organizations that serve the needy, such as housing shelters and food banks. The program operates at 51 sites in 25 states plus Washington, D.C. The local program serves communities from Boston to Sharon. Food waste is the leading material in U.S. landfills and the cause of 8% of all greenhouse gas emissions, according to the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. Data also show that food insecurity affects more than 1 in 3 Massachusetts households, about 2 million people, according to Project Bread, a nonprofit that works to eradicate hunger. Schwartz said food insecurity is an ongoing issue in Boston, and many people who learn about Food Rescue U.S. Boston are shocked to find out how much food gets wasted. Forget, the new director of Food Rescue U.S. Boston, said she was drawn to the grassroots nature of the organization and its critical mission. A native of Paris, Forget recalled going to the farmers market weekly and buying fresh foods that are absolutely necessary. She came to the East Coast for her MBA and left to work in the food industry in California, where she said she witnessed food waste firsthand. When she returned to the region after the COVID-19 pandemic, she said she sought volunteering roles focused on combating food waste. "People aren't aware of what a big problem it is," Forget said, adding that 46% of food waste in Boston is caused by people who buy far more food than they can consume weekly. "They let them rot in their refrigerator," she said. Forget joined Food Rescue U.S. Boston in 2023 after meeting with former director Charlie Burns, she said. She took over Burns' role in February. At Trader Joe's recently, Forget and Schwartz loaded groceries into Forget's car that were driven to Boston Rescue Mission, a housing shelter near downtown. Schwartz said he found out about the local food rescue program through his wife, Nancy, and was astonished by how much food gets wasted. Schwartz, who had one leg amputated, said that lifting a fully stuffed cardboard box of produce can be a bit much sometimes, but he gets help from Trader Joe's staff and other volunteers. "People at both ends are extraordinarily helpful," he added. The program also uses an app that allows volunteers to check when a rescue is requested and when a delivery is complete. Both Schwartz and Forget said the work gives them a sense of purpose while also building a community of mission-minded volunteers. As Forget scrolled through the app recently, her phone rang with fellow rescuer Ann DiBiaso on the line. DiBiaso asked if Forget could join her and Schwartz at Levain Bakery on Newbury Street, which had a surplus of products to donate.